Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 2, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 12, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. The other night, you said that philosophies are anti-meditation. But on the other hand, you agree that the Eastern philosophies such as Sankhya, Yoga, Vedanta are the writings of enlightened sages. Why do the enlightened sages leave behind them a strong structure of philosophical contemplation if philosophies are anti-meditation? Philosophy is not darshan. Darshan is the Eastern term. Darshan means perception. Philosophy means thinking. Hermann Hesse has coined a new word to translate darshan into Western languages. He calls it philosia. Sia from to see. Philosophy means to think, and darshan means to see. Both are basically different. Not only different, but diametrically opposite. Because when you are thinking, you cannot see. You are so filled with thought that perception is blurred. Perception is clouded. When thinking ceases, you become capable to see. Then your eyes are opened. They become unclouded. Perception happens only when thinking ceases. For Socrates, Plato and Aristotle, and the whole Western tradition, thinking is the base for Kanad, Kapil, Patanjali, Buddha, and the whole Eastern tradition. Seeing is the base. So Buddha is not a philosopher. Not at all. Neither is Patanjali or Kapil or Kanad. They are not philosophers. They have seen the truth. They have not thought about it. Remember well that you only think when you cannot see. If you can see, there is no reason to think. Thinking is always in ignorance. Thinking is not knowledge. Because when you know, there is no need to think. When you don't know, you fulfill the gap by thinking. Thinking is groping in the dark. So Eastern philosophies are not philosophies. To use the word philosophies for Eastern darshanas is absolutely wrong. Darshana means to see, to attain the eye, to realize, to know, immediately, directly, without the mediation of thinking and thought. Thinking can never lead to the unknown. How it can lead? It is impossible. The very process of thinking has to be understood. When you think, what really you do? You go on repeating old thoughts, memories. If I ask you a question, does God exist? think about it, what you will do. All that you have heard, all that you have read, all that you have accumulated about God, you will repeat it. Even if you come to a new conclusion, the newness of it only will be apparent, not real. It will be simply a combination of old thoughts. You can combine many old thoughts and create a new structure, but the structure will be apparently new, not new at all. Thinking can never come to any original truth. Thinking is never original. It cannot be. It is always of the past, of the old, of the known. Thinking cannot touch the unknown. It is repetitively moving in the circle of the known. You don't know truth. You don't know God. What can you do? You can think about it. You will move in circles, round and round. You can never come to any experience of it. So the Eastern emphasis is not on thinking, but on seeing. You cannot think about God, but you can see. You cannot come to any conclusion about God, but you can realize. It can become an experience. You cannot get to addition through knowledge, through scripture, through theories and philosophy. No, you cannot get to it. You can get into it only if you throw all knowledge, all that you have heard and read and collected, all the dust that your mind has collected, the whole past must be put aside. Then your eyes are fresh. Then your consciousness is unclouded. And then you can see it. It is here and now. You are clouded. You are not to go somewhere else to find the divine or the truth. It is here. Right, it is there where you are. And it has been always been only you are clouded. Your eyes are closed. So the question is not to think more. The question is how to come to a non-thinking consciousness. That's why I say that meditation and philosophy are anti. Philosophy thinks. Meditation comes to a no-thinking consciousness. And Eastern philosophies are not really philosophies. In the West, philosophies exist. In the East, only religious realization. Of course, when a Buddha happens, as Arya Patanjali happens, when someone comes to realize the Absolute, he makes statements about it. Those statements are different from the Aristotelian statements, from Western philosophical conclusions. The difference is this. A Kanad, a Buddha, first comes to realize. The realization is the first thing, and then he makes statements about it. Experience is primary. And then he expresses it. Aristotle, Hegel and Kant, they think. And then through thinking and logical argumentation, and dialectics, they reach to particular conclusions. These conclusions are reached through thinking, through mind, not through any practice of meditation. Then they make assessments, then they make statements. The source is different. For a Buddha, his statements are only as a vehicle to communicate. He never says that through his communication you will achieve the truth. If you can understand Buddha, that doesn't mean you have achieved the truth. That simply means you have gathered knowledge. You will have to pass through meditation, deep ecstasy, deep purge of the mind. Only then you will come to the truth. So truth is reached through a certain existential experience. It is existential, it is not mental. You must change to know it and to be it. If you remain the same and go on collecting information, you will become a great scholar, a philosopher, but you will not be enlightened. You will remain the same man. There would have been no mutation. That's why I said philosophy is a dimension. Meditation is quite the contrary. The very opposite, polar opposite dimension. So don't think about life, rather live it in depth. And don't think about ultimate problem, rather enter this very moment in the ultimate. And the ultimate is not in the future, it is always there. Timelessly there. Someone else has also asked a similar question. He has asked, problems cannot be solved through thinking. Yes. Certain problems can be solved through thinking. Only those problems which are created by thinking, they can be solved by. But no real problem can be solved by. No lived problem can be solved by. It is not created by. It is there in life itself. Thinking will not be of much help. Only in one way thinking can help you. That through thinking and thinking and thinking, you will stumble upon the truth that thinking is futile. And the moment you realize that thinking is futile for existential problems, it has helped you in a way. It is through thinking that you have come to this realization. But problems which are created by thinking can be solved by thinking itself. For example, a mathematical problem. It can be solved by thinking. Because the whole mathematics is created by thinking. For example, if there is no man on earth, will there be mathematics? There will be no mathematics. With the disappearance of human mind, mathematics will disappear. There is no mathematics in life and existence. In the garden, trees are there. Count 1, 2, 3. Three trees are not there because the three is a mental thing. The trees are there, but the figures are not there. The figures three are in your mind. If you are not there, the trees will be there, but not three trees, only three. The three is a given quality by the mind. It is a projected quality. Mind creates mathematics, so any problem of mathematics will be solved by mind. It will be solved by thinking. Remember, you cannot solve a mathematical problem through non-thinking. No meditation will be of help. Because meditation will dissolve the mind, and with the mind the whole mathematics will dissolve. So there are problems which are created by mind, they can be solved. But there are problems which are not created by the mind, but are existential. Those problems cannot be solved by mind. You will have to move deep in existence first. For example, love. It is an existential problem. You cannot solve it by thinking. Rather, you will get more puzzled. The more you think, the less you will be in touch with the source of the problem. Meditation will be of help. It will give you insight. It will lead you to the unconscious roots of. If you think about it, you will remain on the surface. So remember, life problems cannot be solved by thinking. On the contrary, really, because of too much thinking, you are missing all solutions, and more problems are created. For example, death. Death is not a problem created by thinking. You cannot solve it by thinking. Whatsoever you think, how you can solve it? You can console, and you can think that consolation is a solution. It is not. You can deceive yourself. That's possible through thinking. You can create explanations. And through explanations, you can think that you have solved it. You can escape the problem through thinking, but you cannot solve it. And see the distinction clearly. For example, death is there. Your beloved dies, or your friend, or your daughter. The death is there. Now what you do? You can think about it. You can think and you can say that soul is immortal because you have read it. In the Upanishad it is said that the soul is immortal, only the body dies. You don't know it at all. Because really if you know, there is no problem. Or is there a problem? If you really know that soul is immortal, death has not occurred, there is no problem at all. But the problem is there. Death has occurred. And you are disturbed and deep in sorrow. Now you want to escape this sorrow. Now somehow you want to forget this sorrow. You can take the explanation that soul is immortal. Now this is a trick. Not that soul is not immortal. I am not saying that. But for you, this is a trick. You are trying to deceive yourself. You are in sorrow. And now you want to escape this sorrow. So this explanation will be helpful. Now you can console yourself that soul is immortal. No one dies, only the body. Just as if one changes the clothes, or one changes the abode. So, from one house to another, the soul has gone. You can go on thinking. You don't know anything about it. You have heard. You have collected information. But through these explanations, you will be at ease. You can forget the death. Really, this is no solution of the problem. Nothing has been solved. Next day, someone else will die and the same problem will be there. Again, someone will die and the same problem will be there. And deep down, you know that you will have to die. You cannot escape death. And the fear is there. But you can go on postponing. And you go on escaping through explanations. This one too. Death is an existential problem. You cannot solve it through thinking. You can create only fake solutions. What to do then? Then there is another dimension, the dimension of meditation, not of thinking, not of mentation. You just encounter the situation. Death has occurred. Your beloved is dead. Don't move in thinking. Don't bring the Upanishads and the Gita and the Bible. Don't ask the Christ and Buddhas. Leave them alone. Death is there. Face encounter. Be with this situation totally. Don't think about it. What can you think? You can only repeat old rubbish. The death is such a new phenomenon. It is so unknown that your knowledge is not going to help in any way. So put aside your mind. Be in a deep meditation with death. Don't do anything, because what can you do which can be of any help? You don't know. So be in ignorance. Don't bring false knowledge, borrow knowledge. Death is there, you be with it. Face death with total presence. Don't move in thinking, because then you are escaping from the situation. You are becoming absent from here. Don't think. Be present with the death. Sadness will be there. Sorrow. A heavy burden will be on you. Let it be there. It is part of life, and part of maturity, and part of the ultimate realization. Remain with it totally present. This will be meditation. And you will come to a deep understanding of death. And then, death itself becomes eternal life. But don't bring the mind and knowledge. Remain with death. Then death will reveal itself to you. Then you will know what death is. You will move into the inner mansions of it. Then death will take you to the very center of life. Because it is the very center of life. It is not against life. It is the very process of life. But mind brings the contradiction that life and death are opposites. Then you go on thinking. And because the root is false, the opposition is false, you can never come to any conclusion which can be true and real. Whenever there is a lived problem, be with the problem without your mind. That's what I mean by meditation. And just being there with the problem will solve it. And if you have been there really, death will not occur you again. Because now you know what death is. Never we do this. Never with love. Never with death. Never with anything that is authentically real. We always move in thought. And thoughts are the falsifiers. They are borrowed, not your own. They cannot liberate you. Only the truth which is your own can become your liberation. And your own truth, you can come only through a very solid presence. With any problem that fits, thinking will not solve the real problem. But thinking can solve unreal problems created by thinking itself. Because those problems follow the rules of logic. Life doesn't follow the rules of logic. Life has its own hidden laws. And you cannot force logic on them. One point more about this. Wherever you bring the mind dissects, analyzes. Reality is one, and mind always divides. And when you have divided a reality, you have falsified it. Now you can struggle for your whole life. Nothing will be achieved. Basically, the reality was one and the mind divided into two. And now you are working with the division. For example, as I was saying, life and death are one. But for the mind, they are two. And death is the enemy of life. It is not. Because life cannot exist without death. If life cannot exist without death, how death can be the enemy? It is the basic situation. It makes life possible. Life grows in it. It is the soil. Without it, life is impossible. But mind, thinking, divides it. And it as a polar opposite. Then you can go on thinking about it. Whatsoever you think will befall. Because in the beginning you have committed a sin. The sin of division. When you meditate, division disappears. When you meditate, there cannot be divisions, because how in silence you can divide? We are here. Everyone is thinking in his own mind something or other. Then we are different. Everyone is different. Because your thought is your and my thought is mine. In my mind, I have my own dreams and you have your own. There are many individuals here who are meditating. Neither you are thinking nor I am thinking. The thinking has ceased. Then there will not be so many individuals. Really, there will not be individuals at all. If we are all meditating, then limitations have disappeared. When I am meditating and you are meditating, there are not two persons. There cannot be. Because two silences become one. There cannot be two. Because how can you demark a silence from another silence? You cannot demark. You can demark one thought from another, one mind from another, but two silences are simply one, just like two zeros. Two zeros are not two. Two zeros are one. You can put 1,000 zeros, but they are one. Meditation is creating a zero within. All limitations, all divisions disappear. And that gives you the real eye, the third eye, darshan. Now you have the real eyes to look at. For these real eyes, reality is clear, open, revealed. And with the reality revealed, there are no problems. What is the difference between gazing at an open, clear sky, gazing at an enlightened master's photo, and gazing at the darkness? The technique of gazing is not concerned really with the object. It is concerned with the gazing itself. Because when you stare without blinking your eyes, you become focused. And the nature of the mind is to be constantly moving. If really you are gazing, not moving at all, the mind is bound to be in a difficulty. The nature of the mind is to move from one object to another, to move constantly. If you are gazing at darkness or at light or at something else, if you are really gazing, the movement of the mind stops. Because if the mind goes on moving, your gaze will not be there. You will go on missing the object. When the mind has moved somewhere else, you will forget. You will not be able to remember what you are looking at. The object will be there physically, but for you it has, you are not there. You have moved in thought. Gazing means, tratak means, not allowing your consciousness to move. And when you are not allowing the mind to move, in the beginning it struggles. It struggles hard. But if you go on practicing gazing, by and by, the mind loses its struggle. For moments it stops. And when mind stops, there is no mind. Because mind can exist only in movement. Thinking can exist only in movement. When there is no movement, thinking disappears. You cannot think. Because thinking means movement, moving from one thought to another. It is a process. If you gaze continuously at one thing, fully aware and alert, because you can gaze through dead eyes, then you can go on thinking only eyes, dead eyes, not looking at, just like dead man's eyes, you can look at, but your mind is moving. That will not be of any help. Gazing means not only your eyes, but your total mind, focused through the eyes. So whatsoever the object, it depends. If you like light, it's okay. If you can like darkness, good. Whatsoever the object, it is irrelevant deeply. The question is to stop the mind completely in your gaze, to focus it. So the inner movement, the fidgeting, the inner wavering is stopped. You are simply looking at, not doing anything. That deep looking will change you completely. It will become a meditation. And it is good. You can try it. But remember that your eyes and your consciousness should meet in the focusing. You must be really looking through the eyes. You must not be absent there. Your presence is needed, totally present. Then you cannot think. Then thinking is impossible. There is only one danger. You may become unconscious. You may fall asleep. Even with open eyes, it is possible you may fall in asleep. Then your gaze will become a stone. In the beginning, the first trouble will be, you will be looking at, but you will not be present. And this is the first barrier. Your mind will move. Your eyes will be fixed, your mind will be moving. There will be no meeting of the eyes and the mind. This will be the first difficulty. If you win over, difficulty will be that gazing with no movement, you will fall asleep. You will move into an auto-hypnosis. You will be hypnotized by yourself. That's natural, because our mind knows only two states, either the constant movement or sleep. The mind knows only two states, naturally. Constant movement, thinking, or falling into sleep. And meditation is a third state. The third state of meditation means your mind as silent as in deep sleep, and as alert and aware as in thinking. These both must be present. You must be alert, completely alert, and so silent as if deep asleep. So Patanjali's Yoga Sutras say that meditation is a sort of deep sleep, with only one difference, that you are alert. So Patanjali equates susupti and samadhi, deep sleep and ultimate meditation. The difference is only that in deep sleep you are not aware, and in meditation you are aware. But the quality of both is deep silence, unrippled, unwavering silence, unmoving silence. What happens? That through staring, you may fall asleep. So if you have become capable to bring your mind to your focusing, and the mind is not moving, then remain alert. Don't fall asleep. Because if sleep comes, you have fallen into the other ditch. Just between these two ditches, constant thinking and sleep, is the narrow bridge of being in meditation. fourth question, someone asks that you have said that science experiments with the objective and religion with the subjective. But now there is a new growing science, psychology, or more accurately, depth psychology, which is both subjective and objective. So science and religion meet in depth psychology. They cannot meet. Depth psychology are the study of psychic phenomena is again objective. And the method of depth psychology is the method of objective science. Try to see the distinction. For example, you can study meditation in a scientific way. You can observe someone who is meditating. But now this has become object for you. You meditate and I observe. And I can bring all the scientific instruments to observe what is happening to you, what is happening there in you. But the study remains objective. I am outside. I am not meditating. You are meditating, you are an object to me. Now, I can try to understand what is happening to you, even through instruments. Much can be known about you, but that will remain objective and scientific. Really, whatsoever I am studying is not the real thing that is happening to you, but the effect that your body is recording. You cannot penetrate a Buddha, what is happening to him, because really nothing is happening there. The deepest center of an enlightened man is nothingness. Nothing is happening there. And if nothing is happening, how can you study it? You can study something. You can study the alpha waves, what is happening to the mind, to the body, to the chemistry. You can understand. But really, deep down, when someone becomes enlightened, there is not happening anything.